is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. We have a packed program, friends, started with the Israeli and Iran conflict in the Middle East, the move of the embassy to Jerusalem, the fight into Syria. It is a very complicated situation. We'll uncover some facts right there. North Korea, of course, we have a meeting, a date for the summit. North Korea has made some pretty big announcements in the last 24 hours about dismantling their nuclear site, and seems like they're very aggressive these days to even have all this revealed before the summit. Very, very unusual. We'll touch on that. The confirmation process of CIA Director Gina Haspel. Dr. James Mitchell is here, and we'll talk about that. Colonel Jim Warshak will join us as well on the latest on Mueller and Cohen, the Iran deal. What happened to that again? And all of this business with Trump and the media, is it more fact or fiction? We'll jump into that as well. Ava Armstrong will be here with Warshak a little bit later. Starting at the top of the show here, please welcome Ilana Friedman. Ilana is a strategic counterterrorism intelligence analyst. Ilana has trained in Israel and focuses on the impact of terrorism and its threat to America and the West. Jim McKay is here. Jim has a 30-year background in technology, establishing manufacturing facilities and research and development around the globe. Jim is a political commentator and radio producer here at America Out Loud as well. Okay, the Middle East, my friends. Israel launches strikes now against Iran military installations throughout Syria. And, of course, this has caused some pretty big damage. From what I'm seeing here, reports, they've totally disabled their military in that area. Ilana Friedman, what does this all mean, specifically to the Syria point I'm speaking about, and does this heighten the conflict further?
That it isn't clear that it's going to heighten the conflict further because it's not clear what kind of response we're going to get from Iran, but Iran has had bases and intelligence operations in Syria for some time, and what Israel has done has been to be prepared for whatever Iran throws at them, and they know that there was activity prior to this last engagement, and Syria fired 20 rockets towards Israel. Israel called them clumsy and amateurish because of the 20, only four actually would have landed in Israel had they not been shot down by the Iron Dome system, which is an anti-air missile system, which takes out incoming fire. So all of the others, the 16 other rockets, or missiles, rockets that they fired, rather, landed in Syria. So they were not a threat to Israel at all. However, Israel responded with force. They sent out they took out some 60 targets that included intelligence infrastructure, weapons depot, all kinds of an ammunition depot and all kinds of military facilities all over Syria.
Talk to me about the Iranian buildup within Syria a moment, please. Why has Iran had such free rein to accomplish their objectives in Syria? You know, it dawned on me in the last couple of days here. Boy, Syria, of course, is a hot spot for many different strategic players here. But why have they had such free rein to do that massive buildup in Syria to begin with and be in a position strategically to attack Israel, clearly?
Well, they were interested in Syria because Syria gives them access to the Mediterranean.
Yes.
And they have actually utilized that.
But why? Why has everybody given them free rein to do that?
What happened was that when the civil war broke out in 2011 in Syria, Iran took the opportunity to support Assad. And by supporting Assad, the quid pro quo was that he would give them access. And he did. He gave them, in fact, if you remember, Syria was building a nuclear reactor that was based on a North Korean design and supported by Iran. This is something, and Israel took it out one night. And what has happened is that Syria has been essentially invaded by Iran, and Iran has taken full advantage. The IRGC is all over Syria, and they're active everywhere. And they have been moving down toward Damascus, which is very close to the Israel border.
Yeah.
So Israel has not been able to just sit by and watch them do whatever they do. They responded massively.
Yeah, no, we understand.
Rather amateurish attack.
Yeah, I understand that completely. All right, Jim McKay, the provocation now at the border there, Iran launching the missiles into Golan Heights there against the Israeli forces and, again, against civilians. What do you think Iran wanted to accomplish with this? I mean, to many, this would be an outright act of war. What were they really? I mean, this sounds like just a complete provocation to get Israel involved in something.
Iran is backing both the Syrian operation, Hezbollah, and Hamas. I mean, they have money and troops and advisors and influence in all three of those.
I wonder where they got the money from, Jim. Where do they get that? You don't have to answer that. Go ahead, sir.
Somebody dropped off $150 billion.
Exactly.
But if you look at what's going on, Gaza, they're getting ready to try to break the border in actually a human invasion of Israel. Mm-hmm. The provocation on the northern border is basically the same type of activity to get Israel spread on two different fronts, if you think of it in warfare terms. Mm-hmm. See how much of a response they would get out of Israel. I think they were very surprised that Israel struck with such force that they did.
The Independence Day, the Israeli Independence Day, Ilana, is we're within hours of that. It is tomorrow, May 14th, and I mean this is sort of a landmark moment. So these demonstrations, as Jim was just saying, I mean we're hearing reports there'll be in excess of over 100,000 people. They're saying trying to slam that border. So you've got several pieces going on here. You've got the Independence Day that is in place. You've got the United States Embassy in Jerusalem move happening here. You've got the Iranian deal that was ripped up by President Trump. Take a look, Ilana, at all of this from your viewpoint, and it looks to me like this is a could become a very serious. How serious do you think this escalation will be now?
Well, I think it's very serious. I think what you're really looking at is a perfect storm for all of the reasons
exactly.
that you mentioned. That I prepared a list for you of all the very various things that were going on, and you mentioned almost every one of the items on the list. All these things are not isolated. They are connected. And this march, what they call the March of Return, or the Great March of Return, or the March of the Great Return, Hamas has organized this. Last week they had done. They've been demonstrating. What they call demonstrating, they call them peaceful demonstrations. But they come with hand grenades and Molotov cocktails. They've been sending kites with Molotov cocktails attached to them, and which have been flown into Israel, and then they're burning up Israeli wheat fields and forests that have been many, many years in the in the creation of. They are doing everything. They come with wire cutters. They come with all kinds of weapons, sometimes guns. And so what's happened is that almost 1,000 people on the Gaza side have been injured, wounded by Israeli gunfire or by their own stupidity because they've, injured themselves with what they call work accidents. Mm-hmm. Where some kind of bomb or other incendiary material has backfired and blown up while they were trying to put it together. All these things are going on, what Hamas is trying to do is get at least 100,000 people to crash, to swarm a 40-mile fence. This is the border is 40 miles long.
Right.
So we're talking about a huge number of people. Now, we saw a caravan, what do they call it, down on the southern border. And that got us upset. It wasn't close to the numbers that they're talking about on this 40-mile border.
Right. Mass casualties is what we're talking about at that border.
We're talking about a very bloody affair because Israel will not allow this to happen. While this is going on, we are going to be opening our embassy in Jerusalem, which is what they're fighting against. And we are sending a contingent of some 800 high, you know, VIPs.
Right.
So the security risks in Jerusalem are going to be unbelievably large and serious.
All right, Jim, talk to me a moment here about Russia's involvement. Now, with all of these pieces in play now, with the idea that there could very well be mass casualties at that border, if everything plays out the way we've just talked about here, we're in for a pretty vicious news cycle in the next many days here, throughout this next week. How does Russia respond, and what's their piece or involvement into this, do you think?
Russia has part of their Mediterranean fleet homeported in Syria. That's Syria, as Alana said earlier, that's the warm water port that Russia has never had. And that Russia is involved. They're buddies with the Iranians. They are part and parcel of their nuclear program and everything that's been going on over there. Russia, again, it's a matter of standing up and being a lot of bravado, so to speak, out of them at this point. They will not get involved, is my prediction.
Listen, I want to talk about these five senior leaders of ISIS that were captured in this joint operation that was involved in the Iraqi forces and the United States. It was one of the latest defeats for the ISIS group, the extremist group, and obviously, they, you know, lost all the territory up there now. And so what happened here is they used an app on one of the terrorist mobile phones to lure the guys into across the Syrian border and into Iraq, where they were arrested, which is unbelievable that this took place, actually. Now, the Iraqi government said information gathered during these interrogations have already led up to an airstrike and claims they killed another 40 ISIS terrorists. What do you make of these five leaders being captured like that, Ilana? This was a big success. And I have to tell you another thing. You barely heard anything about this all week long in the news cycle, but yet it was a major story.
Well, it is a major story. Five senior leaders of ISIS were captured by a joint operation with United States and Iraqi forces. And it's interesting the way they did it because despite the fact that these guys, their ideology seems so primitive, they are technologically very relatively advanced, and they use social media and they use technological means of communication to advance their cause and their opportunities. But the important thing is that they got caught. And this is the most, I think this is a real coup for Donald Trump. It's a real coup for maybe hope for Iraq that they were able to pull this off when they've been in such disorder. So I think on all grounds, it's a plus.
Yeah. And, you know, it's pretty wild that most of the American public are not even following this, like you said, a real coup for the president. The media simply doesn't want to cover these kinds of stories. I mean, listen, when you consider the success of what's happened with the terrorist group compared to now within the last year and a half, I mean, just the last 18 months alone compared to the last of the previous administration. And now the success has been tremendous. Now, there are a lot of changes that have happened. I mean, Mattis is new on the job there. Trump is new on the job. The entire administration turnover and the philosophy and structure of how they have attacked this terrorist group have all played into this success. But again, I don't think a lot of people are really understanding the success level it's at. Listen, very interesting as well. In the last week, we only have a moment or two left, but I just want to touch real quickly on North Korea. Big announcements in the last day. They say they're taking measures to dismantle the nuclear sites, and a ceremony will be held held May 23rd and 25th. Jim, talk again, we just have seconds left here, but give me your viewpoint, please, on are you surprised to see the success with North Korea prior to the summit? It seems like they've been very forthcoming with all kinds of compromises, including the release of the prisoners, including all of these big announcements. Pretty big surprise, yeah?
I think that Kim realized that Trump is a very serious individual and that we would have taken military action against him if he continued the provocation with the nuclear testing and firing missiles across Japan and even challenging our territory in Guam.
Right. It looks like we were headed down that road, by all accounts. I mean, the situation was very, very aggressive just 30 days ago. We've had a complete turnaround. Ilana, the last 30 seconds here of the program, I want to give to you, last word for you on North Korea. Are you surprised to see, and what's behind all of these concessions with Kim Jong-un?
Well, as we've discussed before, I think one of the driving factors is the fact that his nuclear program has failed. Because he's essentially blown up his own mountain. And he has poisoned a lot of the water supply for North Korea. We hear anywhere from 60 to 80% of the water supply has been poisoned with radioactivity. And also there is some spillover into China. So he is in a very vulnerable position, and I think that he has taken... I don't think we can expect logic from him, but I think he has taken an expedient path which will preserve his own personal power. One more thing I would say is that there is always the possibility that he will do a flip-flop somewhere along the way that we're not expecting, but what we have seen before from North Korea. So I think it's all kind of a crapshoot, and we'll see.
Okay. Yeah, it's obviously a lot of people would agree with what you just said and would say they're waiting for the other shoe to drop. However, others would say he's gone down a pretty big road now. It's a long road of compromises and situations. Probably going to be hard for the dictator to pull out of this and go back now. It looks like, to me, I would say there's one path forward, and it looks like peace is becoming more and more inevitable on the Korean Peninsula as every day moves forward again, friends. Big thank you to Ilana Friedman and Jim McKay. Well, listen, friends, up next here, we're going to get into the CIA Director Gina Haspel, the confirmation process, but also the whole interrogation process of waterboarding and what's behind it all. There's some pretty egregious statements said from some of the senators. We'll have Dr. James Mitchell on in the next segment. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Welcome back to Viewpoint this Sunday. Well, more Washington theatrics, it seems, with the confirmation process of Gina Haspel is, by some standards, very entertaining, to others, not so much. Well, you know, the nomination of Gina Haspel to the post of director of the Central Intelligence Agency clearly has been delayed by partisan politics, many believe, at a very critical time in the security of the United States and the world with all the foreign policy maneuvers going on. Joining us here on the show, Dr. James Mitchell. Dr. James Mitchell is a national voice in interrogation and terrorism. He was involved in the development of the CIA's enhanced interrogation program and interrogated 14 of the most senior so-called high-value detainees in U.S. custody. Dr. Mitchell's book, Enhanced Interrogation, is a must-read for everyone to fully understand the ramifications of this. And this has been at the center Dr. Mitchell, of this conversation going on with Haspel here in the confirmation process. Now let's confirm with everybody that Ms. Haspel has served 33 years in multiple positions throughout her career there. Seems to be highly regarded, most recently as assistant director and now is acting director of the agency. I guess first and foremost, is Haspel qualified for the position of director of CIA, in your opinion?
My goodness, she's the best qualified person that's been nominated ever that worked up the way up through the ranks. And she, you know, my opinion is probably less important than the best and the brightest in the intelligence community, which almost overwhelmingly support her. Some say she's the best candidate that's one of the best candidates that's ever been nominated, regardless of sex and regardless of era. Like you said, she spent 33 years in the CIA, 7 overseas assignments, operational assignments. She's been shot at. She's been through a coup d'etat. You know, she spent most of her time undercover, and so very little is known about her, and it allows people to spin things. And with her stay as the acting director, she's been in, I think, at least 4 senior agency positions. So there is no one who is more qualified to lead the CIA, and certainly she's more qualified than anybody that Obama nominated or anybody else that's likely to be nominated after her.
Wow. Well, let's talk about that a moment here. Obviously, Dianne Feinstein came out and had plenty to say about, as you say, the records that are unknown, which clearly is the whole basis of the CIA. It's not like everything is put out there in public. So that was a bit of a take back there at some of the hearings where they're wondering where they've asked and requested more of the records. And much of this is highly qualified and secretive information, clearly, as you say. But the thing that stands out about her, I agree, is across the board, you hear everybody in these positions touting her successes, and you can just see with their body language and their commentary back that, you know, no matter how far you dig on this particular individual, it all seems to come up really, really good, unless, again, you're trying to spin something, and that's where it gets a little juicy. So let's do this. Let me ask you, isn't it true that many of the same individuals we're talking about through this whole confirmation here and now, they've approved previous directors during a period when these procedures were used against enemy combatants regularly? It seems, I want to talk about this double standard that seems to be very, very apparent through the confirmation here, and specifically John Brennan. You know, just a few years ago, John McCain came out and called Paul and Senator Ted Cruz wacko birds, he called them, McCain did, you know, for their filibuster blocking then John Brennan. McCain later apologized for that. But there is a double standard here, it appears, with Brennan when you've got McCain that comes out and makes these comments and others are making comments. Why the double standard, do you think, Dr. Mitchell, in regards to, Brennan was her senior, and yet he...
Right, he was up to his eyeballs in that program, by his own admission, and much more senior than her. I think what the Democrats, who are her critics, have somehow succeeded in doing, in spite of the information that the agency put out. I mean, she did not run that program. I was in that program from the time that it was conceived, even before it was conceived, until it was shut down by Barack Obama in 2009. I know who my boss was. 2 days ago, I talked to that man. It was not Gina. It was never Gina. You know, she wasn't in the meetings at the conceptualization of the program. She wasn't in the meetings when Jose Rodriguez said, see if this was feasible. She wasn't in the meetings when Jose Rodriguez and I briefed it to George Tenet, and she didn't run the program. So this is really just a smokescreen for something else. With Senator McCain, I suspect it's that he hates Trump and he would oppose anything that Trump suggested. With the other people, though, I think it has to do with petty politics. She represents a threat to those people who are happy with the level of corruption and the use of intelligence agencies for the personal profit and personal benefit and political benefit of those who are the, you know, the Beltway elites, you know. So she represents a threat to them because she is apolitical and will take the agency back to its core missions. It's the CIA, not the PTA. And you need somebody in there who will tell the truth to the President of the United States, whether he likes it or not, and not someone who's going to be scrambling to try to get a better job or scrambling to please the person just because they want to stay in power.
Yeah. No, that's well said. Many of the senators that are, you know, questioning this now, they're questioning the interrogation process. The waterboarding comes up quite a bit. They're challenging her moral character. Now, I'm hearing that quite a bit, and a lot of these same characters are questioning her moral character. I'm wondering here, why do you think moral character has suddenly come so back in vogue these days? I haven't heard that in a while. Why is that such a hot button up there?
Well, I did hear a lot of talk about what direction her moral compass was pointing in. And I think there's a lot of talk about changing moral character, but not a lot of talk about the changing moral landscape. Things are different now than they were in the immediate aftermath of 2001. And in fact, Feinstein, after having been briefed on the program, gave a news conference in which she said, we may have to do some things that historically we have not wanted to do. And Senator Rockefeller, when asked by a reporter in 2003 after KSM was captured, said he was asked, are we going to ship him to a third country to be tortured to get the information that we need to protect American lives? He said nothing is off the table. And I think that their moral compass at that particular time was pointing in the direction of protecting Americans, pointing in the direction of stopping these catastrophic attacks. And now that those attacks have been stopped, what they're doing is playing politics with it. So from my point of view, what needs to happen is they need to remember the moral landscape at the time that those decisions were made. Mm-hmm. And as I said, she was just part of the program, you know, part of this counterterrorism center. She didn't run that program. And it's unfair to hold her responsible for a program that she wasn't in charge of.
Yeah. You know, I listen to these people talk. And they talk about this moral compass and moral character. They throw it around quite a bit. And I'm thinking about, you know, for me as an American, the motions and attitudes of these people and what they have done to other people throughout there, these terrorists, these criminals, these evil-minded people. Obviously, they have no moral compass. They have no compass, period. So how do we effectively, you know, if waterboarding is not in vogue and the whole interrogation process, I mean, you were there. You've seen the impact of this. And I'm wondering, what should we all take away from this as to what's really impactful? For instance, the top five most wanted ISIS leaders were just captured. It was the news bulletin of the last few days. Now, how do we get information from these guys and do the interrogation process properly if we're going to worry about, I mean, these people don't worry about a moral compass when they come after us and do the kinds of deeds they do. Why are we taking this high road? I know this doesn't sound like a, you know, an easy question, but you see what I'm asking? Why is it that this is so important to the politicians? And like you just said a moment ago, Dr. Mitchell, until the next catastrophe happens, then what? Do all the rules change? I wonder at that moment, by the way. I'm just wondering, does all the rules around the moral compass change at that moment when dead Americans are littered by the thousands or tens of thousands? Does it change at that moment?
Well, definitely the moral landscape changes. I mean, we as a country, especially the senators and the others who are critics of the interrogation program, are a little bit hypocritical in some ways. And let me explain to you what I mean. They don't have any problem at all with dropping drones, dropping Hellfire missiles or cruise missiles on homes where not only is the suspected bad guy killed, because you don't really know whether he's in there or not, but his entire family is killed, the pet is killed, any neighbors that are visiting are killed, their livestock is killed, maybe the village doctor gets killed. Their moral compass is perfectly okay with that, but they're not okay with slapping KSM. So I don't know what it will take to switch it back. I believe, I truly believe, we don't necessarily need the enhanced interrogation now. I know some of the interrogators in there, and depending on who is holding those five guys and who is questioning them, they may have turned them over to a third country. I don't know. I don't know what's going on with those guys. I wish them luck. I know they're going to try very, very hard to figure out how that person views the world and to frame their requests in a way that their worldview makes it easier for them to comply with our questioning. But I think a hardcore person like KSM, who is in a different status, he's in a different place, who had voluntarily taken up arms to destroy us and had demonstrated that he was willing to kill 3,000 people, because he already had, and he had another catastrophic attack in the works, that person falls into a different category than five or six ISIS people who were foolish enough to allow themselves to be entrapped. Different category completely, and it's a different existential crisis, and it's a different moral landscape.
Yeah. You know, Americans do have to question why the politicians are so high on this, because the only argument they have with Gina Haspel is this moral compass they keep bringing up, and the waterboarding and the interrogation techniques that they, again, all of a sudden do not condone, accept. It does rattle the mind, quite frankly, Dr. Mitchell, with, I know, everybody I speak to about why this is such a concern now.
I think it's a distraction.
Distraction.
I truly do think it's a distraction.
Good way to put it.
They simply don't want President Trump to succeed, and they sure don't want someone who's apolitical in a senior position who isn't going to be influenced by partisan politics. The interesting thing is, I think the best endorsement for Gina Haspel doesn't necessarily come from those people who know her and like her and have worked with her and recognize her genius. Mm-hmm. She's a hero, a true hero. She really is.
Wow.
The best endorsement, I think, comes from Khalid Sheikh Mohammed himself, the mastermind behind 9/11. He opposes her appointment, and he would like to address the Senate in order to voice his concerns.
Wow.
Well, what I'd like to see in the elections in 2018 is those senators who vote against her, who stand arm in arm in solidarity with the worst mass murderer that has hit the United States in centuries, I would like to see them explain how it is that they end up on the same side, given that Gina did not run that program.
Wow. I mean, that puts it in perspective a bit, Dr. Mitchell, really. And you know, the thing that rings in my ears when you say apolitical, isn't that the catch-all here? Isn't that something? And I think there's something to what you say. When you say, you know, I mean, clearly the corruption of government goes far and wide, but, you know, trying to get apolitical people into some of these key positions is a beautiful thing for most Americans.
Well, here's what the amnesia is. The enhanced interrogation program was put in place by a CIA director that was a Democrat. You know, he was a Democrat, and he saw the need for having something like the enhanced interrogation program. And many of the other directors that came after that, several of them anyway, well, General Hayden was also a Democrat. And that was at a time when the program was working. So it seems to me like they were able to put aside their politics to do what was right for the country. And we should expect, instead of the senators degrading her and berating her and talking down to her, they should say thank you. And they should be willing to allow Americans to be safer because she's at the helm of the CIA instead of some political hack.
I agree with that. It was an interesting piece in the Associated Press, Lisa Mascaro. She says it's entitled, "McCain, Even an Illness, Sparks Lively, Timely Debates." Let me just read you something here. It's interesting because it brings up Dick Cheney's name. So, of course, everybody knows McCain is battling brain cancer. And she goes on to say, "Rarely has the sick bed been so lively." Interesting way to put it. His rejection of CIA director nominee Gina Haspel's history with torture goaded former Vice President Dick Cheney into a fresh debate over waterboarding and other non-banned interrogation techniques. Now, Dick Cheney, who was an architect of the post-September 11, 2001 strategy, said he would keep the program active and ready for deployment and doesn't think it amounted to torture. which, and I'll hesitate right there a moment, and even if it is torture, many Americans would say, so what? These people torture Americans and torture other people, but let me go on. People want to go back and try to rewrite history, he says. But if it were my call, I'd do it again, he says. Do you agree with Dick Cheney? Should we do it again?
I think it really depends on the circumstances. I don't know about waterboarding per se. If the bad guys get a nuclear weapon, an IED, you're going to have to ask yourself, just to maintain the moral high ground, would it be appropriate for the president of the United States to allow thousands of people to be killed in Los Angeles or Chicago or Seattle or Portland or San Francisco or New York or, you know, some other city? I don't think it would, not to just protect the moral high ground. So the odds are what would happen is they would look for something that was coercive but legal. And we would be in a very similar situation that we're in now. Let me address this issue of whether or not waterboarding the way it was done by the CIA constituted torture.
Yes.
You know, if you've read my book, then you know that that program was evaluated at least three times, I think four times, by the Department of Justice, the highest law enforcement agency in the land. And one time, when they were trying to decide whether or not waterboarding was torture or legal, an assistant attorney general demanded that we waterboard him so he could personally experience what that was like before he made his decision. And we did. And he said he didn't like it, but he didn't believe it constituted torture, nor did it violate any of our treaty obligations. So that, in many ways, has been adjudicated. The other point that I think gets lost is, I've heard people say, well, Obama said, let's just move on. Let's not pursue any action against those people who worked for the CIA. But that isn't true. One of the things he did in around 2014, maybe 2015, was his Justice Department appointed a special prosecutor to investigate whether or not any torture had occurred in that program and to prosecute anyone who had tortured one of the detainees. And after years of investigation in front of a grand jury, he came back and said, no, there's no case to be made. And not only that, in court documents filed by the Obama Justice Department against a terrorist by the name of Ghilani, they acknowledged that the enhanced interrogation program produced valuable intelligence and that it was effective and that it didn't constitute torture. So they can't have it both ways. They can't say, they can if people are such low information consumers that they can say things are perfectly okay out of one side of their mouth, and then when it comes time to voting someone in or getting their way, they can, you know, they can play the torture card. Mm-hmm. That's just inappropriate.
Yeah, so is the way with Washington as it goes. Final question, will Gina Haspel pass the full Senate vote, do you think?
I think it might be close, but she should pass it. And if she doesn't pass it, like I said, the voters of the states, of those senators who oppose her, should ask their senator, why are you and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the terrorist who killed 3,000 Americans, on the same page with respect to keeping this highly qualified individual out of a position where she can keep Americans safe?
And, you know, friends, back to this stalemate, I'll leave you with this final thought here. I mean, you know, when party politics takes over the nominating and approval process of really key administrative personnel to a point where it's crippling government, I think that's a moment where everybody needs to pay attention and speak up just a little bit louder here, friends. Big thank you to Dr. James Mitchell here. And coming up next, friends, the Iran deal, what is happening there, and some interesting information we've got on Iran that we want to share with you. The latest on Mueller, Avenatti, Cohen. Wow. What is fact? What is fiction? Stay tuned. Right back with you in a moment.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. Sports, with 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. As we continue back here with more Viewpoint this Sunday. Friends, I just want to remind you here, the live version of Viewpoint, you'll hear every Sunday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. There's an encore version of this also you can hear the same day on America Out Loud Talk Radio. You'll catch that at 6 p.m. And of course, as you probably know, it goes to podcast worldwide that afternoon just after 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So you can hear this on places like iHeartRadio or podcast networks worldwide. We appreciate you being here and being part of this and encourage you to share the show, follow, and tell others about it. The growth has been tremendous on this show, and we appreciate you being here with this format. It's an unusual show where we bring in the decision makers and really drill down and talk about the things that matter most to you. Let's get started here. Colonel Jim Warshuk is here. He is retired from United States Air Force. He's a career senior intelligence and special missions officer. He served as Deputy Director for Intelligence for U.S. Central Command and has worked on the White House National Security Council. Joining us as well is Ava Armstrong. Ava is an author who writes about America's heroes, the men and women who serve our nation, with a focus on patriotism. Ava's a political commentator, producer, and radio personality here at America Out Loud as well. The Iran deal. Well, this is all but history now at this point. President Trump withdrew from the Iranian nuclear deal, as you know, and this was a promise he made. Again, a lot of people tend to be surprised when these things happen. But again, friends, this was not really a surprise development. The man has talked about this throughout the campaign and throughout his presidency. So I think we all knew it was a foregone conclusion. It was going to happen at some point. Now, Vladimir Putin and Angela Merkel, they came forward and reaffirmed the importance of keeping the Iran deal, as many European allies did. There is a great deal of posturing from Europe, it seems, for this deal to work out an arrangement with Iran or potentially another deal, maybe. I don't know. Colonel Warshuk, what does this all look like with Putin and Merkel coming out, with a lot of the European allies saying they still want to, and then Iran, and one other piece to this, Iran vows, they came out just last couple of days here and said they're going to, again, we have to take everything with a grain of salt here, but they're going to restart the nuclear program if deal collapses. Now, that's provided you're convinced that they ever stopped, which is very controversial in itself. We can talk about that. What's your take, Colonel Warshuk?
Well, Malcolm, here's the bottom line on this whole thing. Yes, we pulled out of this horrific deal, and it wasn't a deal. You know, the thing people need to realize is Iran didn't even sign this thing. It was not. This was a made by Obama and some folks from the various P5 plus one countries: Germany, France, England, Russia, and China with the Iranians. The benefit of this deal and why, you know, those countries want to remain in it, because they're doing business with Iran, and this is money that they see vital to their efforts in bringing in revenue to their countries, because they're selling technology, parts, equipment, you name it, to Iran to do this. They're on the take with Iran. I don't care if they're France, England, Germany, allies of the U.S., and certainly Russia and China, they are benefiting from this. They are benefiting from the billions of dollars that have been released to Iran so that Iran can purchase the types of equipment, technology, training, everything to build a nuclear weapon. You know, they're not building nuclear power plants for energy because it doesn't take 35 years to do that. They've been, from day one, since the Ayatollahs have taken over Iran, they've been on the take And they've been, and their whole effort and focus has been to eventually get a nuclear weapon. And that's what Donald Trump has stopped.
I think what a lot of people are failing to understand is that, again, this was never really, back to Warshak's point just a second ago here, it was never really a deal. I mean, and the point of this is that it was an executive order by the president, Obama. It never went through. It's not a treaty. It never went through Congress. And so this is what made it very easy for Trump to nix this. I think a lot of people are forgetting that point.
Yes, you're right. It can be, you know, dismissed just as simply as Trump did it. And thank goodness that he did, because anybody that has ever sat and read every mind-numbing page of this nuclear agreement, it's just unbelievable how much it's slanted for Iran to benefit. And the world is at its mercy in the end, because it directs the USA and all these other countries to build Iran up in the energy sector, finance, technology, trade. It has a 24-day inspection window. And you all know that inspection wouldn't even ever take place.
Well, and it wasn't going to be at their military installations either. There was a lot of places that were
right.
off grounds.
They're off limits.
Where the hell do you think you're going to build this? In the children's playground?
We already know they have these underground enrichment facilities that are extremely, dangerous. And the real joke about this whole thing, when I read the briefing on it, is Iran, what happens if they violate, quote unquote, the rules? The sanctions can't be reimposed unless you go through the UN Security Council.
Yeah.
And who's on the UN Security Council? All people who will be on the side of Iran. So you have to look at this as Iran got all the money, all the goodies, all the benefits, all up front. And that's why Iran is so powerful right now. They're powerful in Syria. They're powerful in Yemen. That's all Obama money that they got, okay? That's what they spent it on.
Right.
They spent it on, weapons of mass destruction.
Right. Which is what we knew going in. I mean, this was heavily, heavily reported on.
Yeah, thank you, Obama. Thank you.
Well, very fascinating point came from Angela Merkel. This was a stunner to me just a couple of days back here, guys. And she says Europe can no longer rely on U.S. protection. This caught my eyes for sure. She says Europe can't count on U.S. military umbrella anymore. It's no longer the case that the United States will simply just protect us, she said as she was in this speech with French President Emmanuel Macron. She said, rather, Europe needs to take its fate into its own hands. That's the task for the future. Now, Colonel Warshak, I find that statement insulting, quite frankly. I mean, why weren't they taking steps already to protect themselves? Clearly that's a very strange statement to make from a leader from a European country, I think. And it's quite insulting and targeted right toward the Trump administration. What did you take of that?
Well, I mean, this is, once again, nobody expected Donald Trump to win, and they were going to go down this road unabated, nobody getting in their way, and now they're getting caught with everything that's being revealed by both Donald Trump and those who are investigating and revealing all this. This was never supposed to be seen by the public. This was all supposed to be taken care of behind the scenes. This is all part of,
that's a good point,
everything Obama was doing.
Yeah.
Had Hillary Clinton won, nobody would have heard anything of it. This would have been all brushed aside, pushed under the table, and who knows where we would have gone.
Yeah.
And now they're backpedaling, and they're realizing that they've been had, and they're looking foolish. And this is going to reflect on them down the road as their citizens in their country start realizing, wait a minute, you did this and you've signed up for that. And you were in cahoots with Obama. And that's, I tell people, be very cognizant of what Donald Trump is doing. He's strategically brilliant from the standpoint of, here you have a previous president who decided at a certain point in time he was going to do everything by executive order, which can be removed, erased, whatever, by any other sitting president, and or follow-on sitting president. And they, you know, they're diplomats. They themselves, their senior leaders, mm-hmm. all got in bed with Obama on this kind of stuff, and now it's right. being revealed. And so, you know, they've got to cover their tracks, and I think we're going to see the same thing in a lot
well,
of
we'll
other
see.
Things. That,
yeah, yeah, we'll
know,
see.
You know, the,
yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, listen, June 12th, Singapore, that is the date of the summit in North Korea. You know, we weren't sure. There was a lot of talk he might be at the DMZ militarized zone, but that is not the case. And Singapore, a good choice, do you think? Was this, and of course, we're about a month away now on this thing. Ava, you like the place of this thing? Are you ready to book a ticket out there or what?
I do like the place. I think it's a modern place where Trump can be protected, and that's number one in my mind. And I really hope that this goes well. I have a good feeling about it.
I want to mention something. I want to get your opinion, Colonel Warshak, on something. Very, very interesting op-ed on the top of America Out Loud from our guru there, George McClellan. He has a not unlikely solution to the North Korea problem. I haven't seen this take before, but he comes out and says that he thinks it's very, very possible that Xi Jinping, that they are planning for the replacement of Kim Jong-un, and they are behind pushing Kim towards all the things that have happened. All these developments have been from China coming down from the series of meetings he just met again this past week, and that there could be some cards in play here to replace Kim, and that China may put a puppet regime in there. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a really good analysis from George, and George does phenomenal work on what he writes. It's very plausible. Let me kind of play this back a little bit, and here's the significant thing as you addressed about putting this all forward before the summit. That is being done for what we call strategic influence. That, with the media and everything, that validates everything that Trump has done, and it prevents Kim Jong-un, for as long as he's in power, from going back and reneging on anything, hiding anything, or trying to do something with regard to nuclear weapons. This pretty much is the nail in the coffin. It's there for the world to see before they go into the summit, right, so that he can't say, well, I've changed my mind, or we're not going to do this. This sends a message to the world that this is how these kind of things should be done.
Jim, I think you, I can hear in your voice too, you believe the summit is going to be a big success, don't you?
Oh, of course. And this mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. this leads up to the November elections. This
yeah.
is
yeah.
2 years in office for
right.
President Trump.
Right.
And it sells him.
Wow.
It really is.
Wow.
It's selling him for 2020.
Right, this, right. Well,
the 2018 election is a precursor
yeah.
to 2020.
Oh, yeah,
he
definitely,
wants that
definitely.
In people's minds.
There was one line in a speech mm-hmm. that Trump gave. I believe mm-hmm. it was when he announced the nuclear treaty with mm-hmm. Iran would be over.
Right.
He said, I'm a president who will deliver on my promises. And I know you've never had that before.
Mm-hmm.
And that was so meaningful when he said that one sentence.
Right.
It just solidified everything.
And, you know, and the proof has been in the actions. It's been
mm-hmm.
totally, as they say, the proof is in the pudding, and the proof is in the, all of this. So, I mean, we can say all day, you know, maybe, possibly, but he has proven, and he is doing what he said he was going to do. You may not like all these things, or you may, I don't know, but I'm just telling you straight up, people, he has been delivering on the things he talked about delivering on. I know that's very unusual for the political world, for sure. Listen, in our last couple of moments left, I want to talk to you about some of the, you know, I know we're all sort of special counseled Mueller'd out. I know I am. I think probably Ava and Jim are as well, and probably our whole team is. I mean, we're so over this program. I saved this for the last of the program because I've had it up to the top of my head here, friends. But we can't, we do got to touch on it. There were some developments this past week quickly. One of them that I'm seeing that is very suspicious, Colonel, I want to ask you about. I'm getting a lot of strange feelings based on a lot of the reports I'm seeing, not just feelings, but the reports and the information I'm seeing about this Michael Cohen. He does look to be quite a character. And there's a lot of reports here about, you know, the access he was selling, that he was selling access for the president, the fact that he had that relationship with the president to gain all this money. There's reports on one of the Russian companies controlled by oligarch Viktor Vekselberg, who put $500,000 in. Again, they're all tracing this money back. What's your bottom line feelings about Michael Cohen? Where do you think this is going now with the New York court case?
A lot of this happened before he ran for president, so you've got to look at it from that aspect. You got to pull the political aspect out of it and just look at the legal aspects of it. You know, we have thousands of people every day doing all kinds of business deals all around the world with all kinds of countries. Some of it is legit. Just because it's Russia doesn't mean it's illegal. Just because it's China doesn't mean it's illegal. So, I mean, you got to look at what it's all about and what the reason is. And pull, you know, if you could prosecute this in court without Mueller, just as a standard, you know, business practice deal, that if it pull the politics out. See, everything they're doing is all political, and you got to question, is it legal or is there political ramification? The political ramifications can kill you, mm-hmm. but they don't hold any legal. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, there's nothing illegal about it, you know, so.
Right, right. You got legal implications and political implications. Yeah, you're right.
Political implications? Right. What are the legal implications? And then decide.
Yeah.
You know, I think this, I've said this all along about mm-hmm. Mueller. Mm-hmm. He's grasping for straws now. He's mm-hmm. going so far mm-hmm. in so many different directions, looking. He's got to have a scalp on the wall at the end of the day.
Well,
he's got to justify that we found something.
Right, right.
But,
yeah,
you know.
Well the lines are blurred. The lines are totally blurred, Colonel.
Yeah,
and people right now, there's so much happening. Ava, what's your take on Cohen specifically to what the Colonel is talking about? And we get the political implications and the legal implications, but what is your take on this Cohen? There's a lot of reports that he is a bit of a shady deal.
I don't really think it's as shady as people are looking at it.
Okay.
Like Colonel Warshak just said, mm-hmm. these things go on mm-hmm. all the time. I mean,
right.
this person from Russia mm-hmm. had Cohen on retainer, okay? And they were asking to meet with President Trump, but he wasn't President Trump then. He was just a businessman. And they, who knows what they wanted to talk to him about? They could have wanted to talk to him about some, you know, financial thing in Russia. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But all the things that President Trump did before he became President Trump, mm-hmm. those things are off the table as far as I'm concerned. And what Cohen did right now, thus far that we've seen, is totally legal.
Yeah. Well, we're going to be finding out a lot more. We're anxious to get this IG report from Horowitz here. There's speculation, as the colonel has said previously, probably by June, that we are here and we have it within hopefully the next month or so. We've been waiting for that for months here. There's a lot of other factors and things developing this week as well. It's going to be a very interesting week of not only politics, friends, but also with what's going on in the Middle East, as we've been talked about at the top of the program, with the Independence Day of Israel there. We'll keep a close eye on all of that and keep you posted here on America Out Loud. Big thank you to Colonel Jim Warshak, Ava Armstrong, and all of our guests today with this program. We could have used another 2 hours, friends. Remember, Viewpoint this Sunday will always deliver an honest analysis and opinions on all sides of the political aisle. We don't discriminate against an opinion. The main thing is we are always in search of the out loud truth.